Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Yes. Whoa, I had the volume too loud in my headset.
That's just me. I'm yelling.
When the little beep sounded for the call, I jumped. Surprised me.
But you called.
I know it made still
Beep
made a
noise.
tone, yeah. Welcome to Sweating to the Oldies.
That's right. I'm
I thought,
Hans,
and I'm Franz.
and we're here to pump
Pump
you
you up.
up.
I thought of that because I closed the door and I thought, well, it's not too bad in here right now. But I wonder if by the end of the show I'll be sweating. And I
Do
thought,
you
sweating
have
to the oldies.
air conditioning?
No, we don't have central air. We have a unit in the bedroom, and then we have one downstairs that we use. Mostly the downstairs one. Actually, both of them are mostly for Luna.
You can't pop a window
She
open.
doesn't like the heat.
Or is that
But
worse?
well, I have the windows open in here. I just have the door closed. So it should be all good. It's not supposed to be too hot.
Do you
But it
hear
just
too
made me
much
think.
background noise here?
I don't usually hear background noise, no.
I'm just asking because I'm sitting in a different place and I have the sliding door open, so.
Okay. No, I don't hear anything right now.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we talked. I've had a lot happen. I've had a
Yeah.
lot of dental work done. I've
Three comic
had
book
three
conventions.
comic book conventions. I've had my laptop die, so I'm still trying to recover data from that.
You had a sex
But
change.
yeah, I had that.
You
I'm now a woman.
were elected governor.
A lot,
Yeah.
absolute lot. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I did some painting this weekend, a little bit of painting, because I had the extra day off, and
You
we
decided
had
to
these.
work.
Yeah, just a little bit outside. It was nice. I mean, it was a
Oh, you
good
did
weekend for
outdoor
it.
painting.
Yeah, just we have all of our windows have these wooden shutters. They don't actually close. They're d decorative. And last summer I painted like two or three of them, and the windows and like the front door. But there was two that I hadn't done. So I started on those. Maybe I'll do some more painting before the summer is out.
Yeah.
So,
Do you have things you have to paint that are you have to go on a ladder, or are you one story?
it was all one story stuff. They're up a little high though. I was using a step ladder just to get up a couple steps to get the top of stuff. But I wasn't painting anything up on second story or anything. The windows on the second story don't have the same shutters on them, so there's nothing up there to paint. I used to paint back in the day in my early 20s. I used to paint for a couple years. I painted as a full-time job, and we did some ladder stuff, some roof stuff.
So you're a professional. You know how to put the primer and all that good stuff and tear away the old paint.
Yeah, my skills are a little rusty, but I definitely, when I started that job, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But by the end, I was a pretty good painter, and it definitely, a lot of it stays with you.
Yeah. I heard the hardest part or the is prepping, you know?
It's usually at
And
least the most time consuming.
yeah, once you're painting, that's the easier part. But
Yeah, I mean, if
covering
it's a brand new
things
house,
and
usually you can just get right in there.
yeah.
One time, I know a couple times we did a job where we just went in on a brand new house and they just wanted colors on the walls. And that was just simple. They didn't have furniture in there yet. But most of the time, yeah, prepping everything, getting everything. Especially when you're doing it, someone's paying you, then you do a lot of prep because you don't want them to be pissed at you for getting paint on their furniture and stuff. But Do It Yourself Noise is brought to you by Scotch Tape.
Is brought to you by Operation, the game that keeps you playing. Battleship.
Operation always ticked me off.
Really? Once you mastered it, it kind of sucked though. Because
Because it
there's
took all the
nothing
fun out
left.
of it.
There's nothing left. You're not competing for anything anymore. It's like you get the hardest piece out and you don't hit the edges and then you're all fine.
Yeah. I guess maybe I just had shaky hands. That's probably all the whiskey I was drinking when I was a kid. I didn't really drink whiskey as a kid. You don't have to be scared.
Whiskey.
Did you hear me the first time?
I
I didn't hear
have
any
to drink
response.
whiskey.
I was like, oh, maybe I touched a nerve.
Were you drinking as a kid?
Not really. I said I had shaky, maybe I had shaky hands, and that's why I didn't like that game.
Yeah.
Maybe it was all the whiskey I drank, but I didn't really drink whiskey.
Well, my parents would resort to whiskey when you were teething.
Oh yeah,
Have you heard of that thing?
that's a yeah. It's like an old school trick.
Yeah, it's like when obviously when you're a baby, you don't know they're doing that, but I saw them do it in my brother. And that explains everything.
Maybe that's why you don't like to drink now.
Maybe
You're
you
like,
put
ugh, that's
the
nasty. Like my teeth are
just
fine, man.
never I think comic books I instilled a sense of right and wrong, and drinking was never a popular thing in comic books. So, because my dad drank, you know what I mean? I can't say that. I always knew there was an age limit, but I don't know why I never drank. I just never did. And high school came around, and there were. You know, being part of the basketball team and all the social aspects of everything, there's plenty of opportunities to drink, and I never drank, and nor did my friends peer pressure me to drink or
That's good.
smoke or any of that shit. So I didn't start drinking until I met a French Canadian in college, and we used to study late nights, and he liked to drink. And I started to drink there, but it was just more of a, I'll have a beer or two kind of thing. And now
Those French Canadians, man.
I'm kind of in the same mode as I'll do a social drink, you know, when I go out with people, I'll just have one. I found out I on this trip and maybe last trip that I like those cider beers. I am a fan of those. I don't, if I have to drink anything, that's what I'll choose. Because it's got like an apple taste to it, and there's no bite or af I, one of the things I don't like about beer is the aftertaste. Or it's not so bad when I'm drinking it, but afterwards I just don't like that bitterness or anything that has a well, I don't like the taste of it. So if you mask it with something like apples, and then you have your flavored alcohols that I'll never drink again, because after I graduated college, I did some partying with some friends in the job related stuff, and I had a couple of bad experiences that Barb had to live through, but that was just a lot of throwing up and stuff, and I was like, why do I want to do this to myself? I don't enjoy it. I don't I don't feel good afterwards. I have this headache and I feel sick, and why do I do that? I'm already a nut ball. I don't need to put anything on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, I had some of those experiences with getting sick and stuff like that, but I just drank through it.
Ha 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 ha.
No, I think I just, it's been a long time since I've had any experience like that, because I think I learned when what my limits are, because I mean, I don't get a headache from having a few drinks and stuff. My tolerance is pretty good too.
Yeah.
So I learned,
Well, I
you
never
know.
let to build a tolerance, you know what I mean? And the few times that I did drink more than I should, I got really ill. So when you associate certain things with sickness, you're conditioned. At least I was conditioned.
Yeah, it makes sense. I
The
could
only
probably
time
use a little
I
more
drank a
conditioning.
lot is in college. One of the professors had a Vegas trip for IEEE. And in Vegas, they just keep pouring you drinks and pouring you drinks. And I don't know if it's all the oxygen they pump in the buildings or what, but I drank a lot and I didn't get sick. I mean, not nor did I feel crappy. So either they water shit down or there's so much oxygen in those buildings to keep you awake that you don't feel bad afterwards. Well, this has been an episode of Drunk Retro, drinking through our pasts.
Do it yourself
You
drunkenness.
just heard my origin of my secret origin of drinking.
Well, one thing I did when during the break here was I'll protect the innocent by I won't say names and stuff, but I was sitting with Kara and a few family members, and one of the family members got a little upset about something, sort of went on a little bit of a tirade,
Yeah.
and it was just an awkward moment, and I was trying to think of how to lighten the moment, and I knew earlier on from that evening that the gas that I had wasn't smelly gas.
Oh,
And I have enough control that normally sometimes, I'll in a situation like that, usually I'll just sneak them out silently, just
even
kind of ease them
Aren't
out.
you worried about in a situation like that? You're sitting around family that it's going to be a silent but deadly?
No, I usually am consistent in a session, like in a period of gas of whether of smelling or not, Like if it's gonna smell, it usually smells consistently, and if it doesn't, Plus we were outside, so I
That's
thought,
weird
it
because mine is usually a
might
buildup. In
dissipate.
other words, it doesn't smell. Ooh, what happened?
I won't test it out, you know what I mean? In a situation like that, I'll go in aware of what my situation is, and make sure,
Yeah.
I'll test it out away from people, and then I'll be like, all right, I'll find out I'm good, and then, but so it was silent, and everyone, it was kind of awkward, and so I let one squeak out, but I made sure it made some noise, and I was
You
like,
purposely did?
yeah, purposely, I was like,
It
burp,
was that awkward.
yeah. So it's burp, and it worked as everyone just
Laughing.
started dying.
Yeah.
Kara couldn't catch her breath because she was just shocked by the fact that I did it. But I was super proud of myself. I couldn't stop talking about it for the next
Hey,
couple days.
that's the
Like,
way to you were like a hero.
I know exactly. I said, "Remember when I saved the day with my butt?" For like 3 days, I kept talking about it. I was so proud of
What was the
myself.
awkward moment? It didn't involve you guys, right?
No.
Okay, I was just, sometimes family gets involved in shit and says, oh, marriage, blah, 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 or whatever.
No, it didn't involve us at all, and it wasn't between any people. It was
Yeah.
just one person talking about like their own something that they
Beliefs
were upset
or
about
something.
with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they just kind of went on a tangent and
I
got a little
usually walk out
awkward.
of the room. I believe what I'm gonna believe, and I usually don't go on tirades of religion or politics because you can't win. It's like a stupid thing. You believe what you're gonna believe. You're brought up to believe what you're gonna believe or whatever. But I believe some things are stupid.
Yeah, I'm pretty accepting of people, and I kind of let people do their own thing there. I have some pet peeves, that hot button issues, that certain things I can't let go without saying something. Like, every once in a while, as like a white guy, I'll have somebody come up to me and think that I'll be okay with like a racist joke or something like that just 'cause I'm a white dude, you know?
Yeah.
And things like that, I can't be like, I can't pretend to think it's funny, you know? But if it comes down to just a difference in what somebody believes and what I believe, I just kind of, I don't try to convert people to my way of thinking. If
Yeah.
somebody wants to have an actual serious conversation about it, where we're not trying to like convince each other, we're just having a
Yeah.
conversation.
Those are the
But
nice ones, but
yeah, but that doesn't happen too often.
yeah, because well, I don't want to get into it here.
Yeah, I hear you though. Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, but I was I'm glad to be recording again and
Are you
glad just
recording, by the way? Is your recorder recording? Good. I'm just still a little cautious with this new laptop. You never know until you play around with things and
Yeah, recently I've started to make sure that I have a backup.
this is the only second, well, third podcast that I've done, but with one of them, it's not my recording that goes out. And then I just did DC Noise last night, so I'm still a little cautious. I downloaded a wicked, stupid. I was trying to get this laptop going, and I'm a computer science dude, and I did something stupid as I Googled something like Adobe Acrobat. And I downloaded the first thing that I didn't pay attention to the link. I just downloaded it, and my antivirus caught some of it, but it installed malware on there. Those like advertisement malware, thing called Rocket, and a couple other things, and they're very malicious in the fact that they take away a lot of your browsing experience, and they actually run in the background collecting information about sites you're seeing and stuff like that, and catering the pop-ups to, it was awful. And I had to get that off my system.
That sucks.
Yeah, that's so stupid. I'm usually cautious about that stuff too.
Yeah, but I guess if you have.
I just got back from the cons, and I was just trying to get stuff up so I could do stuff, do at least do the bare minimum.
Plus, if you have so much different stuff when you're setting up a new computer, you have so many different things, and every time you turn around, you go to do something that you're used to just being able to do on your own system and realize that there's another program you have to
Yeah, I have
install
to
and stuff
install.
and
Yeah.
things that you just have used gotten used to having on your system and stuff. So
Things you've had forever and you never thought about what the settings were.
yeah, you haven't
Like,
thought about
I
needing
recorded
it.
DC Noise last night. Perfect. I had it. I had the settings right in Pretty Me, blah, blah, blah. And then I go to upload it to the server and I'm like, God, that's taking long. I wonder if something's going on with my internet. And then I looked at the size of the file and I'm like, holy shit, that was a 2 hour file and it's more like a 6 hour file, like lengthwise. And I was like, man, I don't even know what my settings were because I had installed a new Audacity because it kept the old one kept crashing on me. So I've had a lot of weird stuff happen, but I didn't buy a lot of comics on this trip. I did find a few Tarzans. I didn't take any lists with me, so I bought stuff that I knew I absolutely didn't have. I bought some Tarzan. I bought an old Flash that had half of the cover ripped off, but it was like, other than that, it was like in awesome condition. It had Captain Boomerang on it, and a lot of Korak, son of Tarzan, Tarzan family, some old Cap Kirby stuff, and that's about it. But one of the things that I bought that was absolutely fascinating, and I highly recommend it if anybody's interested. If people have been watching me on Facebook, I've been posting a lot of commissions and stuff based on the Freedom Fighters. That I really like that comic. It means a lot to me because when I was a child, I got the Freedom Fighters off the spinner rack and I enjoyed it. Whether it's a good comic today, I don't really care, but it meant a lot to me as a kid. It's one of those things you read over and over and over again, and you can memorize the panels as they happen. But I got a lot of commissions about the Freedom Fighters, but I found this Alter Ego Presents Quality Companion, and it's, oh man, it's a wonderful thing.
Nice.
I mean, a lot of great things came out of Quality, like the Spirit, all of the Freedom Fighters, Plastic Man, Doll Man, Black Condor, all kinds of cool shit. And then there's like weird characters I never even heard of. And those are fascinating. But what's fascinating about this book is it has every character ever published in the back, and like what the key appearances are, when they appeared, what their powers are, all that. And then it's got another section with all the creators for that time period. And it's phenomenal. I can't wait to dig my hands into it. Matter of fact, one night I was with co-host Bill Bomer. We were up late one night. Robert Atkins called and he's like, "Hey, could I come by? I'm drawing and it helps me, stay up to talk to people." And so it was me, Melanie, Barb, and Robert Atkins, and we got to talk about the Quality characters, and we found this character in the back of the book called Bill the Magnificent. Absolutely fascinating character, because he's kind of like Shazam, except he says "Jeepers Creepers," and he gets like a power base, but one of his big powers is self-confidence. That is such a weird thing, that to me is like a very unique ability that I don't, see. You're all of a sudden you're super confident.
It's like his superpower is
Yeah,
Prozac.
but
That's pretty funny. Yeah, they do
super
a good job
strength
on
and
those
vulnerability and
companions.
speed as a bonus, his personality was enhanced to give him more confidence, perhaps too much.
Nice. That's a interesting flaw. I could see a writer doing some fun stuff with that,
Yeah, he
being
didn't exist too
overconfident.
long. He first appeared in Hit Comics number 25 from 1943, and then he had appearance in that same magazine from 25 through 34, and that's all I know about him. But that's why I love to read James Robinson stuff, because if you pay attention to what he writes, he brings obscurity into it, and it always makes you wonder, where did this character come from? And if you look it up, chances are you'll find a Golden Age link.
Yeah, he doesn't
Or
usually make up characters, usually.
a link to the Silver Age, or something like that. And then if you're like me, I go off and research. I have this thing like, is I want to know more about this character. Why didn't I know about it before? It's a weird thing, but I just wanted to give a shout out there. But it was a good trip. The Heroes Con one, I got to see the whole Geek Brunch crew minus Chris, because he's the retro and he had other things to do, but maybe next year. And then me and Daryl were there, so all of DC Noise was there except for Keith, who had no excuse. But and then there was all of the Valiant podcasts, so it was a really, really, really good time. And I don't know if I told you this, but it's always great to meet listeners. And most of the people that came up to me were already people that I met from prior Heroes Cons, that listened to the Geek Brunch or Retro or DC Noise. And this past time, it was cool because there was a guy there. He says, "I'm gonna be near the Star Wars booth." You know how the what do they call them? The 508, or what is it called?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. But I'll be a stormtrooper. So I walked by and I knew what he looked like, but I'm like, how am I going to guess which stormtrooper he is? So I'm looking for a stormtrooper, and a biker scout comes up to me and he goes, "Ramps." That was fucking awesome.
With his helmet on.
With his helmet on. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. But that was a pretty cool experience. Heroes is amazing. The hardest thing to do, though, is we have such a big group of people that you kind of have to decide where you're going, and you don't always get to meet up because you can't have a party of 35. And the group grows and it grows and it grows. So that's the hardest thing. You have to break away for lunches and go certain ways, and other people go other ways, and
Yeah, I kind of got that impression from the pictures that everyone posted. I could tell at meals, sometimes you'd see the groups change and switch it up, and I could see sometimes you would meet up with Daryl and sometimes guys go off on your separate ways and stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty determined. You never know what's going to happen, but I'm pretty determined to make it next year. I'm kind of keeping it in the back of my mind already, so just to plan far ahead, So.
And in Denver, I met a lot of people. Usually, I don't meet a lot of people at the West Coast stuff. It's just pretty much me walking around. I meet people, but it's more like meeting creators and talking to them and doing stuff like that. But I got to meet some really cool people through the Valiant podcast, so that was a lot of fun. I got to eat dinner with them. At Ace, it was pretty much me the first day, and then the second day, my cousin met with me, so I was with my cousin all day. And that was his
That's
first
cool.
convention, and he actually loved it. He probably spent more than he should have, but he found a lot of unique things that you don't see every day, so.
Nice, yeah, and that's the one you sat in the old school Batmobile, right?
Yeah, I did. I did. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, you were ready. I think they're probably glad they didn't put the keys in the ignition. You were ready to take
Yeah,
off.
I had my cross shirt on, so it was probably a bad idea to leave the keys there.
Yeah, you were ready to just go run down people and hump them.
That's right. Run them over first.
Exactly. Wouldn't be crossed if, you didn't do that. Got to get the order correct.
But I want to experience a con with you, man, because I think meeting your brothers, the people that you talk with, would amaze you, because the thing that amazes me more than anything is, at least what I've found in the geek culture, is they're genuine, man. If they put a front on the podcast or there's something that they don't. They are who they say they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've seen that expressed, and I think that's really awesome. And I definitely do want to experience that, and it's also an influence on me just to feel comfortable being who I am, and I wanted to be consistent with that and just try to represent and be as honest
You
about who
fit
I am,
right in. You'd cut some gas and Keith would
Exactly, yeah.
absorb it. He'd breathe it in. He'd say, "Yeah, brother."
He'd tell me what I ate.
Yeah, he'd tell you what you ate.
He's a fart detective.
He is. He knows those things too, and he's got a wide range of a palate, so he would know what grass you ate.
Yeah. He could tell me where it was located. That's what that could be his, side job when he's not Brown Arrow. He could be a fart detective and never.
I feel bad for him though, because of all of us, the three of us, he gets attacked the most. Like for his food stuff, he posts first. He posts like a weird looking grass meal, and then he gets attacked from everybody. Right. And then he posts, "Hey guys," like he tries to do the right thing. And I mean, well, I'm not saying it's the right thing. He tries to say, "I'm eating right. I'm eating what you got, the crap you guys eat." And then sometimes he says, "Well, Daryl and Mike, hey, I do eat bad stuff too." And then he eats the bad stuff. And then somebody says, "Well, damn it, you weigh 350 pounds. You need to go to a doctor." I'm like, jeez. It is so weird because we've had listeners. We're all three of us are in a picture, and they attack his fat more than anybody else's fat. But me and Daryl are not skinny people.
Yeah.
We're way fat, and I'm short and fat. But they seem to like latch on to Keith for some reason. I don't know what it is.
I joke around, 'cause I just play along. I think it's fun, the whole back and forth of,
Yeah.
getting teased back for what I eat, and I go back and forth. But yeah, I was the most recent thread on Facebook. I was starting to feel bad for Keith. I was like, I just want to be clear that I was joking.
It's like you're
I
gonna
was
have
just
a heart
teasing
attack. I mean, Jesus.
him.
Thing with heart attacks, though, I think people don't realize is you could be skinny and get a heart attack. Yeah, being thin is gonna help you, and if you exercise, your heart's gonna be in better shape. But man, I've had a lot of friends that you wouldn't think in your wildest dreams that they would have a heart attack. I mean, if you looked at them, they were like, you would never guess it.
Yeah, I think it's undoubtedly.
And they were healthy and they exercised, and heart attacks attack, and sometimes it's your biological genetics that
Sure.
leads you to that.
Yeah, what it is.
Exercise will help you, and it'll help you from accumulating fat, which is bad for you, and eating right will help prevent cholesterol buildup and all that. But you could still have, you could still eat good and generate bad cholesterol. And
Yeah,
that's when
like
you
you
kind of
said, it
have to have
does.
pills. I mean, it's the only way to try to get the balance.
Yeah, it does definitely depend partially on your, like you said, your genetics and stuff. I mean, it doesn't help to be overweight, and that's one cause. It's more like there's more than one cause, and being overweight definitely is part of that, but it is true that you can still have a heart attack for other reasons, and you may have hereditary, you may have heart defects or circulatory defects that you're born with that may cause something that could go undetected, you know. So you're not immune to it just by living healthy, but it is good to it is good to be to not be overweight. But so shall we commence with some comic or Buck
What do
Rogers
you feel
pop?
like talking like first?
I don't know. Maybe some comics.
Sure. Why don't you go? I've talked a lot about the conventions and stuff. Give you
Sure.
a.
Let's see what I'll start out with here. We'll go in chronological order. The first thing I read was The Brave and the Bold, number 120. I think this is one of the issues that I got from that flea market that time I talked about. It's because it's from the 70s. Yeah, it definitely is, because a bunch of them were owned by some dude named John Beer, and he wrote his name on the inside cover. I only got these for 50 cents, so I'll take that. So this is actually a DC Giant for 50 cents, and it's a team up with Commandy, the last boy on Earth.
Ooh.
And this is a Bob Haney era Brave and the Bold, sometimes known as Zany Bob Haney, because his stories would be kind of crazy. With art by Jim Aparo. I think Jim Aparo did everything but the colors on this, and I couldn't find a color credit. But the story opens with Commandy, who, you know, is this one of the few survivors of a Holocaust, that a nuclear Holocaust that changed the world. It's a Jack Kirby creation, and in his world, humans and animals have kind of switched places. The animals now are anthropomorphic. They speak and they talk like humans, and they hunt down humans and treat them like animals.
Very much like Planet of the Apes kind of thing. Hello.
And he's leading a gang of
You know, I lost you for a second.
Oh, did you? Okay.
We were talking about the anthropomorphic characters, and I said something like it's kind of like Planet of the Apes, and then I lost you.
Well, yeah, so that's That's how things open, is with Commandy running from Captain Bat and his in a gorilla slave squad. And we know that that's Batman. We can tell he's in his costume and everything like that, but they're calling him he's calling him the gorillas are calling him Captain Bat, and he's actually leading this squad.
Very interested in this. Did how are they in Commandy's world, and how did Batman get there?
Exactly. That's how you're
Oh,
supposed to
it
feel.
opened up, and then it tells you how he got there.
Yeah, it'll tell you that, but that's exactly how you're supposed to feel. It's supposed to be grabbing you. And that's Bob Haney for you. You're supposed to be like, what the hell, every time. So Batman catches up to Commandy, and they are kind of in this valley where they're obscured from the view of the gorillas. Batman doesn't say anything to him, and they tussle a little bit, doing a little judo, and then Batman hooks a rope on an outcrop of rock up above them, and he mentions for motions for Commandy to climb the rope and escape. So Batman actually lets him go, and Commandy finds a horse, and he takes off on it. And then next thing he knows, he looks back, and here comes Batman and the gorillas after him again. And he's confused because that guy just let him go, you know. So he reaches Mount Rushmore, actually. And when they arrive, there's also some bear rangers there. So the bears and the gorillas sort of meet up. Batman's there, and the bears are actually leaving sacrifices of food to Mount Rushmore. They think that the Mount Rushmore carvings of the presidents are gods, and part of the reason they think that is because there's this loud music coming from the distance. It's playing, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?" And so Commandy's able to rush through this barrier that they call the Death Belt. It's actually a barrier of nuclear energy, and nuclear energy is any kind of descendants, anybody that's born of people that survived the nuclear holocaust, like Commandy is, they're immune to the nuclear fallout. So Batman pursues by he actually ropes a lasso on George Washington's chin and uses the leverage to jump off his horse and swing over top of this beltway of nuclear energy. Commandy escapes at the last second because he's pulled in by a couple human hands that bring him into a cave inside of Mount Rushmore, and there's actually other survivors in there. There's other humans, and they're all, long-haired, bearded, and everything. And there's this old guy. He's the leader of the group called Manton, Manton, and he shows him a copy of Brave and the Bold issue 118. So not only do they have an issue of Brave and the Bold in the cave, it's only from 2 months prior.
The Joker and Wildcat.
And Commandy sees the cover, and he says, "Holy crap, that's the guy that's chasing after me. Hey, wait a minute, Batman, I saw books like that in my father's souvenirs. I knew he looked familiar for some reason. This is the guy that's chasing after me." And next thing you know, Batman shows up in the cave and takes off his cowl and shows that he's actually a human. So apparently what happened, as Batman recounts from his perspective, these people in the cave, they have this ancient Indian powder. And this ancient Indian powder, they're able to use it to on the comic book to bring Batman to their future because they want his help. So what happened in 1975, Gotham City, Batman passed out and his body's still there, laying in a coma. And Commissioner Gordon's standing there at his bedside wondering what's going on. And Batman wakes up in Commandy's future, and he immediately runs afoul of the gorilla squad. And the gorilla squad, they are about to take his mask off. Batman gets in a fight with their leader, a gorilla named Gorgo, And because he's able to take out Gorgo, he gets the respect of the rest of the gorillas, and Batman commands that they follow him. So he actually did that so that he could stay undercover. They would think that he's some kind of a bat man. And he was hunting after Commandy to try to do what he did earlier in the issue and allow him to escape and not actually get captured by the gorillas. So they put together a plot to try to help these people escape the cave, and Batman uses the tape recorder that they're using to play the music and the amplification system. He connects it to a microphone and pretends that he's the voice of God. And he commands the bears to get all their people together and drag this huge this huge passenger jet that he saw earlier on. And so they're occupied for a really long time dragging this plane, and that gives them time to try to get out of the caves. But one of the younger members of the people in the caves, he gets all excited and starts going the wrong direction, and Gorgo, the gorilla that Batman defeated earlier, is still around, and he sees this guy, and he gets all the rangers and the gorillas together to go after this boy. So because of that, Batman realizes that he was left behind, so he goes back to save the boy, and he gets captured by the gorillas. So the boy gets away. He catches up with the rest of the people in the cave, and he lets Commandy know that Batman got captured. And they tie Batman up, and they're actually dragging him along behind their horses. He doesn't get as injured as he probably realistically would. He'd be pretty tore up. But so Commandy goes back to rescue Batman. He catches up with them, and he cuts the ropes connecting him to the gorilla's horses, and Commandy pulls him onto his horse. And meanwhile, they had directed the people in the cave to a old caboose that was sitting on some train tracks, and they get it going using the wheel inside, and starts rocketing down the hill. And then Batman and Commandy come up on the horse, and they jump onto the caboose just in time. And the caboose, because of the momentum of going downhill, it's going really, really fast, so the animals can't catch up with them. And so the story ends with them using the powder to send Batman back to his period of time, and Commandy, is happy to remain, even though Batman offers to take him with him. They don't have enough powder anyways, but Commandy wants to stay in his own world and help the people that they've found, and the people they plan to make some rafts and shoot down river to get further away and find a place to try to stay safe from the animals. And that's the end of that story. There's a backup. I'll talk about it separately, just so I'm not going on for too long. But I find it kind of fun how these giant size issues, they'll have like different features in between, and in between these two stories, there's a page where it's Bob Rozakis had put together one of those scrambles where it gives you the it takes like a like the first one says Len greet Ran, and you're supposed to unscramble that and figure out what superhero that it says. So it
Wait,
reminds me of those like
what did it say?
Len greet Ran,
Like
like the planet
Ran, like
Ran.
the planet Ran,
Yeah,
Thanagar, Ran,
and I
Adam
think,
Strange? No, I don't know.
yeah, I think it's like, so I think it's, you're supposed to unscramble. I think it's like Green Lantern, maybe. The answers are in here
I see what
somewhere.
you're saying.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
there's like 26 of them, and then there's a bonus that you put together by taking the numbers throughout all the 26.
Yeah.
Bantam is Batman, things like that. So it just reminds me of those big books of that I would get
Puzzles,
when I was a
yeah.
kid. It was like puzzles and coloring and stuff like that.
That's what we'd get like for those long drive trips.
Yeah, because we didn't
We
have
didn't
like
have no TVs
DSs
or anything
or
to like play video games, what we had is a book of puzzles or a coloring book, and that's what keep you occupied.
Pretty much.
And then you'd usually stop at a Stuckey's. Well, this is me because I'm a lot older than you, but Stuckey's were like places out in the middle of nowhere, where you can gas up, and they'd have various things, but they'd have a comic rack, and I used to get comics from there, and then that would replace my puzzles because.
Yeah. No, comics were exciting because you had an actual story to read instead of just doing crosswords or something. So actually, I found that story very entertaining. It was fun. Because just like you, I was like, now how the hell is Batman?
They tend to that used to be like one of their things. It's like introduce the ending and then say how you got there and then finish the story.
Yeah.
That was a very Silver Age slash Bronze Age thing to do. And
Yeah,
I
definitely.
think it was try to get people that saw the cover to open up the first page, and you're like, it's to give you a WTF moment. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It worked for us. But it
Right.
worked for me when I was reading it, and all I had to do was describe it for you to say, what the fuck?
I have too many holes in my Brave and the Bold. I was looking at covers while you were talking about that. I do have that issue though,
That's
but
actually
I
one of
do
few
not
that I have.
remember reading it. It's cool that the backup is Secret Six. That's
Yeah, I was going to talk about that a little bit too.
yeah.
But I'll let you go with something first.
Well, my choices. I just went through a box and I said, what do I feel like reading? And I picked three different companies. I have a DC, I have a Kamiko, and I have a First. And I think I'll start with the Kamiko because I have a full run of this and I haven't read very much of it. And it has a lot to do with a podcast. When I first discovered podcasts, one of the first podcasts I discovered was Comic Book Noise. Ironically, I'm part of that network now. But Derek was one of the first podcasts I started listening to. There was two of them. There was that one and Comic Geek Speak. And those are the two podcasts that I listened to. And Derek was a solo podcast, and he talked a lot about books that he liked. It wasn't always current stuff. And he'd have this random comic review thing that I would absolutely love. He had this like random number generator thing where he would actually let the generator work, and it would randomly pick a comic for him to read, and he'd go dig it up and then reread it. But he was real fond of this book called The Maze Agency, and I haven't read much of it. This is the third issue I've read. I've read one and two, and they don't really continue. They're done in ones. It's like reading a Jonah Hex or a Brave and the Bold, for that matter. It reminds me of like a Moonlighting or one of those TV shows where there's a couple, but the creative team is Mike W. Barr. Which some of you may have known from Batman and some other work he's done. And the penciler is huge, and I don't know if this is one of his first works, but it's Adam Hughes. So that was that, and it introduces you to another story, and it focuses around Jennifer Mays, who is a private investigator who gets hired to go solve mysteries. And a somewhat journalist, Gabe Webb, who partners up with her on these mysteries. It's very. I'm not an expert on Maze Agency, but you could correlate it to a episode of Scooby-Doo, because Scooby-Doo, there's always a mystery, But the difference between this and Scooby-Doo is Scooby-Doo, they just randomly seemed to drive into towns and there was a mystery happening. They weren't contacted by people usually. They just heard about something, drove into town, and something happened. She's a private investigator, so people go to her to solve mysteries. And this one guy comes to her because somebody's vehicle, he was doing it, working on a prototype of a Z2000, which was being tested on a test track and stolen during the test while it was being driven. So it's kind of unique in that. And everybody, they do a good job of setting up like what a mystery would be, kind of like in Clue or something like that. You know, like who is it going to be? Somebody with a candlestick, or you get introduced like in an episode of Scooby-Doo. You get introduced to like three or four people. They tell you what their backstory is. Oh, this is the innkeeper. Well, you know, that kind of thing. Well, this is the guy's mother, and he doesn't get along with his mother, and they own this company together, and his mother blames him for stealing the company from underneath her. So is the mother a suspect? Ooh, the mechanic is the mechanic is down on his luck, and you know, it gives you the backstory of the mechanic. Here's the driver, who's an alcoholic who knows how to drive really well, but they all have incentive to do this thing. Here's the investor. And you're along for the mystery trying to solve who done it. And they lead you various ways, and she's got like a competing agency. She used to work for another company, and that person is competing against her in this mystery. And they actually solve the mystery, and it turns out to be it was the investor that did it. Even though that other competitor of hers blamed the mechanic for stealing the car, but they proved her wrong. But that it's very formulaic, and it is very interesting, and it's a done in one. So I don't know if all the maze agencies are like this, but it's like watching a TV show, especially back in the day. There's definitely a romantic theme, like I guess you could say, between like Bruce Willis and what's her name and Moonlighting, but it's not quite,
Sybil Shepherd.
yeah, Sybil Shepherd, but there's not quite that connection there. There's implications that there could be something, but it's not quite there. And that theme keeps going through the books, at least the ones that I've read. But and then, interesting enough, they advertise the Amazon by Tim Sale and Steven Siegel, and that was just reprinted by Dark Horse, and I read that too. But what was coming out at this time, just so you know, from Kamiko was Elementals, which was Willingham's work. So if you're a Fables fan, you can go check Bill Willingham. The Amazon, which I already talked about, the Trouble with Girls. Which I've heard about but never read. That was by Will Jacobs and Gerald Jones. Rabbit by Frank Thorne. Haven't heard of that one. Troll Lords by Scott Biederstadt and Paul Fickle with Len Straczynski. And I've heard of that name, but never heard of that title. So most of these titles I don't even know existed. Grendel, I know. That was Matt Wagner. You know, you. He's still being published at Dark Horse off and on. Justice Machine, I have heard of. I've read some tie-ins with another book. I've never read a Justice Machine proper book. But I don't have a lot of experience with Kamiko, but I do have a full run of Maze Agency because of a podcast. I just haven't gotten around to reading it, and this was a good opportunity to jump in. And I was surprised to remember that, you know, Adam Hughes did this, and he doesn't do much comics anymore other than covers. He seems to make a fortune off of drawing art for people.
Yeah, didn't his style change a lot too from how he started out? He got a lot better since. Is that him?
He did get a lot better, but this does look like Adam Hughes. I'll take a few snapshots of it and show it to you.
So the
The
style's
face,
similar,
it's
it's
got a
just.
similar style. It almost looks like a Alan Davis style. But he does have like facial expressions and stuff, because like what I first knew Adam Hughes was from Justice League after he took over for Maguire. That was my first, like, where I really knew who this guy was. He could hold his own, because I was like, well, that's not, he still has a style that's very similar to Maguire's. It's just not Maguire. Like, you can look at Maguire and know it's him. And yeah, but I you can definitely tell it's him.
That's cool.
So the year of this was published was 1989.
I don't know much Kimiko. I mean, I didn't know any of the indies really in the 80s. I've retroactively gotten more familiar with the output of some of the companies. And just kind of like how you're experiencing from reading the Kimiko, reading that issue, I kind of had the same thing experienced with that relates to one of your other issues is with First Comics. I would pick up one of theirs, and then you end up seeing ads for a bunch of other stuff. And sometimes it's you don't even realize certain things existed, or you forgot about them, or something. And it's funny how the house ads will still work like 30 years later. But that's pretty neat.
Yeah, and you get interested in it. I always read the little captions to say, is that something I'd like to try?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know about it.
Sometimes it'll be
A
like.
lot of what I knew about First Comics and Kimiko, and I really learned from Derek, because I'll give him credit for that, because I didn't gravitate to that sort of thing. I was pretty much a Marvel and DC guy, other than I would dip my toe into like Judge Dredd and Eagle Comics and a couple other things. But if it wasn't for Eagle Comics and maybe one other two books, I wouldn't have tried much. Because I mowed the grasses and I knew I needed to know what happened in Thor. I needed to know.
Yeah, totally.
I was very much different. I'm a very different reader now than I am. No, I'm pretty much the same dude. Fuck it.
No, but I, well, when I was, my tastes have changed, and I pretty much stuck to Marvel and then briefly Image when I collected comics as a kid. And there's some stuff I still like the same, but even a lot of the artists I like when I was a kid aren't really the ones that I like now, for whatever reason. But
Like Rob Liefeld, I loved, and then I didn't like, and but I have a, I love his attitude. I just don't like the way he has, like, he attacks certain things. Do you know what I mean? Because it comes off as non-intelligent, but he's extremely intelligent. I was listening to 11 O'Clock Comics, and it was a very interesting interview with him. I wouldn't even call it an interview. It's pretty much Rob just talking. And I'd highly recommend it if you're, but he is really passionate about stuff like images and stuff. Like, he'll say Kirby image would blow his mind, and so he talks a lot about his influences and stuff, and it was really eye-opening, because I haven't heard him talk much other than I used to love X-Force and New Mutants, when he was on it. And I'm guilty of buying 20 copies of Youngblood. So.
Well, yeah, when that came out, I bought it, but I was too young to have the money to buy that many. But yeah, I mean, I liked them back in the day, and I'm not really a fan of them now. But I'm curious about that podcast because I'm always up for having my mind changed or expanded.
I
So,
actually think you'd enjoy this,
Yeah, I
because
think it'd be
it is
interesting.
him rambling off, and he gives a lot of good historical tidbits about what was happening at Marvel at the time, the attitude, things I didn't realize. Like, I didn't realize that McFarlane was kind of like a mentor to him, because he was a little older than Rob. And he would kind of give him advice, and he does his McFarlane impressions, which are hilarious. I enjoyed the shit out of that interview. The podcast has changed a lot. It's almost turning into like an interview show, but I'm learning a lot. So I enjoyed. Check that Rob Liefeld out and tell me you don't enjoy it.
Yeah, I won't.
I would be, really be curious to see what you think about him. Just listen to what he has to say. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I am interested because, like I said, I'm always interested in having my mind changed or my perspective widened, you know? Like I try to expose myself to things that are outside my personal realm of experience, you know? Just so that I can see perspectives of other people, maybe even not ones that I disagree with, but just people that are like different from me or have different lives or are coming from a different gender or racial perspective or something. So that's cool.
It's an interesting time in comics, though, because it made a lot of people rich.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, rich.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they made a lot of money. They definitely
He had
did.
said that Fabian Nicieza, I don't know if you know how to pr if that's how you pronounce it, but I know the man. He's done a lot of work, and then he even did a lot of work at Valiant in the Acclaim years. But he said that Fabian admitted, because Rob admits he was a kid, and what he wanted to do was create, and you can kind of see that in New Mutants and X-Force. This is a damn tangent if I've ever seen one, but he created a lot of fucking characters. Do you know what I mean? And some of them stuck, like Cable and Deadpool are huge. A Deadpool especially. And he wanted to create, and the editors were trying to ground him, but they wanted him to create. So they threw him on their X-Men title that wasn't selling. It was their worst seller. But back then, worst seller was probably way better than the best seller today. But the worst selling title, and they kind of unleashed him, and they said, "We're going to give you a writer that will let you create." So Nasiza actually told Rob, he says, "You help me pay for my house." So that was
Yeah,
a
I guess so.
interesting thing.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy to think about, and especially now today.
Yeah, it was an
Yeah.
exciting time though. As much as the 90s get shit on, I can't remember a time when I was more excited to go to the comic shop. I really can't. And it had to do with the new. It had to do with this sense of, wow, Marvel and DC have competition that are at their caliber. Yeah, yes, Wizard magazine was. I loved reading Wizard. It was like my previews now. I read it from back to front, and it was very influential in your decisions. If it said this was going to be hot, you bought it. I mean, or tried to. And Valiant was a huge company for me, and so was Malibu.
Yeah, we used to keep up with Wizard and make sure we got the issues of Wizard just as much as we made sure we got issues of the comics that we followed.
Matter of fact, I'm so mad at myself for throwing away my Wizards. There's so much history in there. There's so much I want to talk about. I gotta go back and find Wizards. I'm sure I could find old ones in cheap bins.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think people are really that into collecting them, at least not right now.
Yeah.
They probably will be someday, though, but I think right now people are still kind of.
Whoa, there's a huge wasp in the house, and I don't know how to get it out now. I mean, it's in between my glass door and screen door.
Just yell, help!
I do. Barb would like, how did you let that happen? And I really don't know how because I had the screen door shut.
Yeah. Well, they'll find a way. Little insects like that, they'll find a way to get in.
I wanted to
Sometimes
go to
it's
the other side so I could. I think it's best to leave it for now until Barb gets here, who's the biologist, and she could figure out a way to get him out. He looks pissed.
yeah. Let her use her experience. She's always posting pictures of crazy insects and stuff like that. She probably wanted to take some pictures and catalog it.
I almost have him out now. I open the screen door just a little bit. We'll see if it works. We'll give him some time to try to find it.
Tease him in his way out.
I hate wasps and bees because I remember we were kids, me and my brother. We went to Kentucky Fried Chicken. This is on a vacation, one of the family truckster vacations. And my dad drove us to one of those Kentucky Fried Chickens, and we were like, let's eat by the ocean before we go to like Disney World. It might have been Magic Mountain, right? It was a roller coaster place, so it might have been Magic Mountain. But he's like, let's stop and eat because we didn't have a lot of money when we were kids, and we would not want to eat at the parks because the parks cost a lot of money to eat. So we stopped and got a bucket of chicken, and we were eating this bucket of chicken. Near this beehive, and there were a lot of freaking bees. And me and my brother were swatting at the bees, and my dad thought we were trying to play with them, but we were just trying to keep them away from our food. But anyway, my dad had a leg, and he put the chicken near his mouth, and there was a bee on the leg, and it like bit him in the inner part of his mouth. And he had the it caused the swelling just to the bottom of he almost looked like he had elephantitis on the bottom of his jaw, 'cause you know that skin that you have under your face? My dad wasn't fat, but he looked like he was a 300-pound man that lost all the weight and the skin just hung there.
Oh,
There was
man.
like a it's like a rooster skin. And I remember us going to the roller coaster, and my dad was still insistent on riding it, and that skin was just flapping in the wind. It's just nasty.
Oh my God. That's
Sorry
messed
to
up.
vector us, but there's a lot to talk about.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I
So
never
what?
got stung inside the mouth, but I got stung on the eyelid.
Yeah.
That was pretty scary.
I got bit in the balls by red ants, but
Oh my God.
I was playing in the sandbox, and there was a red ant pile as a kid, and they bit I was bit 20 ti probably about 20 times in the nut sack.
Oh my gosh.
I
That
got rid of
explains
that wasp
everything.
finally. Yay.
And that life has never been the same.
Yeah.
It all comes back to the red ants.
Could be.
Well, speaking of nut sacks, no. Actually, this has nothing to do with that. But yeah, so as we mentioned before, there was a second story in The Brave and the Bold 120, and that was a reprint of Secret Six Number Two. There was a series in the 60s, The Secret Six, and I think it was only 7 issues. It was about that. And they reprinted issue number one in Brave and the Bold 117, but then this was the only other one that they reprinted. They only reprinted the first 2 issues. And it would go on to be an idea that was resurrected during. In Action Comics, during the stretch of time when it was weekly and it was an anthology title, there was some new stories with the Secret Six, at least of a similar concept to this one. And then, probably most famously, then when they brought the idea back again, it was the Gail Simone when the members of the team were supervillains, and wasn't as it kept a few connections to this, but it was a fair bit different. But this story is actually written by E. Nelson Bridwell. Well, he came up with the plot, and then Joe Gill is credited with dialogue, and the art's by Frank Springer. And so this Secret Six, and I think this is a concept that carried over. There's a group of six people who are all agents, and they're organized by someone called Mockingbird, and they all know that Mockingbird is one of them, but they don't know who, and the reader doesn't know who it actually is, Mockingbird. So that creates some suspense and some distrust against them or amongst them. And it starts out with three of them. Dr. August Durant, who's a nuclear physicist, he supposedly has a rare disease that he needs to get the cure from Mockingbird, and Mockingbird only gives him one pill at a time. Then there's Carlo Di Rienzi, who he is a magician and escape artist. His son was crippled in an explosion at his house, and Mockingbird is holding over his head some treatments for his son that might make him walk again. And then the other one of the three that the story starts out with is a woman named Lily Deneuve, who's a famed French actress, and she was framed for murder and convicted. Mockingbird came up with a fake alibi for her that allowed her to be free, but now she has to use her makeup skills as a disguise artist for the team. So those three are brought together, and there's apparently this there's these plans for this United States Air Force plane that's a nuclear weapon. It's got crazy capability and everything like that. And Mockingbird knows that the plans are going to be stolen by it doesn't come right out and say the Soviet Union, but it's pretty clear throughout the story that that's who it is, that an agent of the Soviet Union is going to try to steal the plans. So what they're supposed to do is actually break in and steal the plans first and replace them with a phony, so that they steal the phony instead and then replace the original plans where they originally were at. So Dr. Durant, he actually has clearance to go to the base where these are at. So Lily disguises herself as a secretary, and Carlo, the escape artist, as a general. And they go and they break into a safe and take the plans. But as they're leaving, they're seen by a general. And so, to keep his cover, Dr. Durant has to sound the alarm. And Lily and Carlo have to fight their way out and use some techniques that they have, some equipment that they have to get away. And they're able to escape. And they take off their disguises, and so then nobody recognizes them as they walk away. But back at the base, Dr. Durant finds out that what they just stole were actually fakes, that the military also knew that the Soviet Union was going to try to come for the plans, so they put fakes in there, and that the real plans are in the general's desk. But when they go to look for the real plans in the general's desk, those have been stolen as well. So while the Secret Six was stealing the fake plans, the Soviet Union got in and stole the real plans. So the Secret Six have totally screwed up this. So they have to try to figure out what they can do to rectify the situation, and they are able to see in a news article that this guy Nikolai Sholokhov was in America, and they were a and Dr. Durant's able to see something in the photograph in the newspaper that makes him think that he's got a that the guy has the plans. So at this point, that's when they That's when they call in the other three members of the Secret Six for the second part of this mission. And these three are a guy named Mike Tempest. He was a heavyweight contender known as Tiger Force, and he had some manager that got him in debt to the mob, and he was supposed to take a dive like Daredevil's father. But Mockingbird got him out of the situation, but he can at any time tell the mob where Mike Tempest is at, so he's indebted to Mockingbird that way. Then there's a guy named King Savage, who's kind of like a man of action sort. He was taken prisoner during the Korean War, and he was rescued by Mockingbird, but and he's and so King Savage was able to tell the U.S. what some plans that he had found out while he was in captivity, but they don't know that he also talked while he was in captivity. So he's known as a hero, but Mockingbird could reveal that he had talked. And then finally, we have Crimson Dawn, a London fashion model. But at one point, she was hooked into a marriage by a guy who, a con artist that conned her out of her family's money. And nobody really knows about it, but Mockingbird does, and he's holding that over her head. So he's holding something over everybody's head. So he calls these three agents in, and Crimson Dawn, she's going to be the honey trap, as it were. She gets on the same plane as this Nikolai Solokov, and she hits on him and flirts with them and gets him to ask her out. And so she goes back with him to where he's staying, and she radios the rest of the team and lets them know where they're at. And King Savage, he uses these special grips to climb up outside the side of the window and break into his hotel room while he's not there. But he's not able to find any sign of the plans. So he goes back, he tells Dr. Durant that that's the case, and Dr. Durant apparently knew that he probably wouldn't find them. But he wanted to verify that for sure. And now they're 99% sure that he's carrying them on himself. So they set up another situation where Carlo, he disguised himself as a Arab kind of conjurer, he does tricks and stuff like that in the marketplace. So he does this trick where he makes Nikolai's tie disappear and freaks him out for a second, but then he gives him his tie back, but he's actually replaced it with a duplicate. And apparently this tie, it has these micro dots on it. And so they examine them back at their at where they're staying, and we get a little recap of Durant's history, how Mockingbird recruited him, because some of the members are suspicious of him, and so then what they do is King Savage and Mike Tempest, they create a fake fight in the marketplace. They start beating each other up and throwing each other around. It caused all this chaos, so that in the midst of the chaos, Crimson Dawn, she actually karate chops Nikolai in the back of the neck when he's not looking, and that knocks him out for long enough for Carlo to come along, still disguised as the Arab, and he replaces the tie with another duplicate that has fake plans attached in the micro dots. So Nikolai wakes up, and Crimson escorts him away to his plane, taking him back to the Soviet Union. And as far as he knows, she's still like his flirtatious lady friend. And so we see when he gets back to the USSR, they start building stuff according to his plans and everything. And time passes, and then when they're completing some of the last steps, because it's fake plans, it causes a huge explosion and it blows up their secret lab and everything. And then we see that it happens off panel. We see Nikolai standing there with some guy. All we see of him is his hand holding the gun. And he said, "We were tricked, you bumbling amateur. They wanted you to steal those plans. They were fakes. And you know what the penalty is for such stupidity." And he's about to pull his gun out of this holster. And story ends with a tape recording being played on the general's desk in the Pentagon. And next to it is the tie with the real plans. And the message tells him that it's courtesy of Mockingbird. And it says, "Mocking." He says, "Mockingbird. Now, who the deuce is Mockingbird?" And in the background, we see Dr. Durant passing by the room in the hallway.
We'll never meet the mockingbird, I bet.
You know,
And if that mockingbird don't sing, daddy's gonna buy you a diamond ring.
that is going to buy you a tie with micro dots. Yeah, interestingly, the Secret Six series did end without Mockingbird being officially revealed. But when they returned in Action Comics Weekly, it did reveal who Mockingbird was. I don't know if I should spoil it, but it's pretty old now.
You can spoil it.
So fast forward the 20 seconds if you don't want to know for some reason.
Action Comics Weekly is pretty obscure.
I know, it's
Yeah.
pretty old, but
It's pretty
Durant
old.
actually turned out to be Mockingbird. So, and he, in that, apparently, I haven't read the Action Comics run, but apparently he recruits a new Secret Six in that.
I did read the Action Comics run, and I don't even remember Secret Six being in it. That's weird.
Well, it was a long time ago.
And
But yeah,
this
I
only
enjoyed this
ran
story too.
7 issues, so
Yeah,
I'm
it
only
was a good
missing
one.
4 of the 7, so I should just finish it.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it. It was a lot of twists and turns, and I liked the whole setup. And I mean, I realized like it was much more successful as a concept when they revived it with supervillains and stuff. And that's a well thought of series and everything for on its own. But
I
I do
wonder
like.
how many people said, "That's not my Secret Six."
Yeah, probably not very many, but it does show you.
That's not my Secret Six.
Where's Mike Tempest?
Yeah, where is he? Where's
I want this
Durant?
ragdoll shit.
What's this shit? Who asked for this Suicide Squad in my Secret Six?
Yeah. Who
I'm
got their
sorry, I just
Suicide
had to
Squad?
make fun of that, but.
Yeah. But this is cool. I like that. I like that if they're like normal people.
Where is Lily de Nouveau?
Where's
Crimson
my
Dawn.
Crimson
Come
Dawn?
on, where's King Savage
That's
and
my
his
lady.
flying plane?
Yeah.
Come on, son of a gun.
But.
Where's my escape artist? I realized that Ragdoll came in through the toilet, but he's not an escape artist.
No. He's a entrance artist or something.
Right. My next one is Legends of the DC Universe number one. I think I bought this off of eBay. Just the full run. It's one of those full run things. I never bought it when it was coming out. I have a lot of Legends of the Dark Knight, but not Legends of the DC Universe. It's from 1998, and the story is by James Robinson, which is pretty cool. And the art is by Val Tsimikas, and inker is Paul Neary, and Joey Calaveri is the editor. But really cool. There's a cover by a painted cover by Glenn Orbix. So, this is a really cool take. It's a Lois Lane story, focusing on the different heroes. The first few pages are freaking awesome. It's like James Robinson doing what he does best. He's talking about super villain superheroes and their link to the super villains around them. So he'll like go to Central City and show Captain Cold, and then he has a golden age of golden age Green Lantern, Alan Scott fighting the Icicle, and Batman and Gotham is later. He's basically showing the legacy of Gotham and how it used to be protected by a Green Lantern, and it used to be brighter, and now it's protected by a Dark Avenger. And then it's got the Flash and some villain that I don't know who it is. It looks like the Shade, but I'm not quite sure from that picture. And then it's got like Captain Atom, Green Lantern, Blue Beetle, except it's the classic Blue Beetle. Martian Manhunter. It's just saying how these heroes came from nowhere, and then Metropolis never had a hero until Superman came. And there's some panels, and it's got a cool Doom Patrol little panel here. Hour Man and Star Man and the Mist. That was really cool. Of course, James Robinson used the Mist and Star Man a lot in his own comic. There are some panels, there's some splash pages in here that look very Kirby-esque. I mean, while it does, the art doesn't look Kirby, the style looks Kirby, and there's even Kirby Crackle on some of these. But Superman's fighting a guy called Professor Kilgrave, and I'm like, oh, is this a Golden Age guy? I don't remember this guy. But Kilgrave was introduced in John Byrne's run of Action Comics, so he's not an old school guy. He's a fairly new school guy. He's probably about 3 feet tall, and he's a technological genius that thinks he can defeat Superman, but that doesn't work out. Superman basically takes him out, captures the pod, and he is going to turn him into the authorities when LexCorp shows up, and they're all in their LexCorp armor, and they're saying, "We'll take control of this." And he's like, "What? I just did all the work, and you're now taking control of this?" But the whole incident between LexCorp and Superman led to Kilgrave escaping. And this is when Lex Luthor had hair. He had that reddish hair, and he was pretty corrupt. He's dating an actress. She's like a celebrity, and he gets all pissed when they're doing a news story on her going with Lex Luthor, and he throws one of his trophies through the TV. But he is going after a scientist that invented a cure that will lead to fixing synapses and neural transmitters, which is like the cure for Parkinson's and other diseases that are related to that thing. And the scientist, he tells his goons, "Go tell him that we want to buy him out." Well, this scientist doesn't want to be bought out, so Lex's goons actually go over there and steal his stuff. Lois Lane is interviewing him. He sends Lois Lane away during this incident because he's shook up about the Lex Luthor threat. And later on, when they come back to it, they've killed his wife and they've blown up his building. So I don't know what's happened to the cure at this point. That's how the story ends. But there is another villain introduced in here, and I don't know if he's a new guy. I didn't have time to look him up, but his name is Madness. He looks like a Joker guy, but he's got like women hands, and he's half dressed on one side, kind of like Two-Face, and wearing something different on the other side. And he basically shoots out this thing that causes people to just go mad, and they seem to be shouting things that are related to like TV or something like that. Like this lady says, "I'm Carmen Miranda, kiss me," and then someone says, "Into once more into the breach," you know, like famous court quotes and stuff. "Let's twist again like we did," and it's a song. And "Remember the Alamo, kill for the love of killing. I'm the son of Kong," you know, all kinds of just crazy shit. And Superman has to deal with that and kind of like rescue the people. He realizes he can protect the people by shielding them from the rays that Madness is putting out. But anyway, it kind of ends on a cliffhanger. They killed the professor, and Luthor did it. And we'll have to find out next issue what happened. Some
Dun,
really
dun.
cool art. I don't know Val Simekis. I've read a lot of his stuff. I think in Malibu he did Tarzan, and that's what I read from him. And he's done a lot of other comics. I know he's done the Demon and stuff. I don't know if he's influenced by Kirby, but there's something about some of these panels and the layouts that just screams Kirby. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I recognize his name for. Vale Semex.
Semex, yeah.
Wikipedia said he graduated from college with degrees in chemistry and mathematics before pursuing a career in advertising.
That's
That's
interesting.
interesting. Yeah, it's quite a switch. Yeah, long runs on the Demon and Lobo, working with Alan Grant.
Yeah, that's what I remember him from, the Demon. I forgot that he did the Lobo. But very cool comic. I'll probably read the next issue soon.
I think I know him from doing some stuff on Wolverine and the JLA.
Yeah. I think he's even done some stuff for like Justice League Classified and stuff like that.
Cool.
But he's pretty good. I don't know what his influences are, but I really like the splash. I might even include the splash in the show notes. There's
Cool.
a lot of art that was in these books that is kind of that jumps out at me.
Nice. Yeah, he's definitely a talented artist. It looks like he has his own website, valsemix.com, which that's SEMEIKS.
Yeah.
But it looks like he has like an extensive list of credits and stuff like that if you're interested in what work he's done and stuff. So it's pretty cool. All right, so I got something that is I figured I would keep a theme going from the first thing I talked about, because I was looking at my issues at DC Comics Presents that I have, which I don't have a lot, but I have some that I hadn't read yet. And I have a Superman team up with Commandy, because this is DC Comics Presents 64, and it's, speaking of Kirby, it is written by Mark Evanier, Kirby's assistant and champion, and the pencils are by Alex Saviek, with inks by Frank McLaughlin, letters by Ben Oda, and colors by Michelle Wolfman. And this is called "May You Live in Interesting Times." And what
What
happens
was
is
the number again?
64. So this team up results because there's a guy named Victor Epic, and he's a host of a television show called Astro, which is a science television show in Metropolis. And he's jealous of Superman's ability to travel in time, and Superman explains on the show how he does this by circling the Earth at such a high speed. And so Epic is inspired by this. He's looking wistfully out the window at a woman passing by in a really short skirt and walking her dog in tube top, and he's thinking to himself, why didn't women dress like that when I was a young man? He's, I'm never gonna see the space program reach other planets. He wants to at least get a glimpse of what the future is gonna be like. And so he goes to this lab where there's this gyroscope device. It's this really large, like probably 12 to 18 foot tall device. And he turns it on and goes into another room with these glasses on to protect his eyes. And what he sees out there is, well, it starts to just pick up speed, and he's got it programmed to go to the same velocity that Superman goes at when he goes around the Earth. And what ends up happening is that he never sees anything. He actually brings part of the future to Metropolis, to parts of Metropolis would get replaced with the future Metropolis, and those places that are the parts that are replaced, they end up getting pushed into the past. So what you have, like the part of one of the parts of Metropolis is where the Daily Planet is at. So what you have is the future Daily Planet arriving in the present, and then the Daily Planet of the present gets pushed into the past. So Jimmy Olsen and all of them, they're looking out the window and they see a brontosaurus. And so Superman, he flies into the area of Metropolis that's been replaced by the future, and he sees some Tiger Men, the people of the troopers of the great Caesar, who's a Tiger Man that's taken the name of the old emperor. And Commandy's being chased by some of these tigers through this part of Metropolis. And Tiger Men, they capture Commandy and they take him to Great Caesar, who's taken up residence inside this futuristic version of the Daily Planet building, which is all in crappy condition, just like all this part of Metropolis from the future is all rubble and this dystopian future that Commandy is from. So Superman, he uses his supervision. He can see inside of the Daily Planet, and he sees Great Caesar and his Tiger Men, and they sees Commandy, this human boy. So he goes in there to investigate and protect Commandy from what's happening. And Great Caesar, he's very aggressive. Basically, Caesar, he thinks that somehow he doesn't realize that they've been transported to what is his past and our present. He thinks that suddenly there's just been this uprising of a group of what he calls animals or humans. He thinks that these humans have just suddenly appeared, and he feels like it's an attack on him and his people. So he's readying to attack them. He doesn't realize that beyond this short little area that he's in, that he's actually in a world that's filled with humans. So Superman gets Commandy out there, and Commandy, it's pretty funny, he recognizes Superman, and there's this little sequence where he remembers being in the future and how they watch these tapes called Betamax, and how the wise men of the day stored their wisdom on these Betamax tapes. So he recognizes Superman from those Betamax tapes that he watched. And finally, Epic leaves this room where he's looking at this gyroscope of device, and he hasn't gotten a glimpse of anything, and he's just kind of depressed. But when he steps outside, he sees this dystopian world, and starts to realize that maybe his gyroscope was responsible. And he's super upset to see this future as a dystopia, and it's not the great, wonderful future that he thought that he would be missing out on if he didn't live forever. And he immediately gets captured by Tiger Men. So there's another entertaining sequence where, Superman and Commandy, they're trying to work together to fight back these Tiger Men on the streets as part of Metropolis, and Superman picks up two Tiger Men, and they said, "You humans belong in a zoo." And Superman says, "That's not a bad idea." So he flies him over to the Metropolis Zoo, and he drops him in a cage with a female tiger. And the one Tiger Man says, because the tiger's roaring at them, "I don't blame you for being angry, madam. The human beasts have started prisoner of war camps." So they think that this zoo is a prisoner of war camp, and the other Tiger Man, is facing away with his hands over his eyes, and says, "Turn your head, brother. Can't you see she's naked?"
They don't realize that they walk on all fours.
Yeah, that's not enough, that they just think it's a naked female
Is one of
tiger
them Prince
woman.
Tufton?
He's not ever named if he's one of them now, so it's just Caesar and his troopers. So because this is actually happening in the present, it's going to be a massacre soon, because the National Guard is starting to arrive at Metropolis and mobilize like forces that are much greater than what Caesar's tiger men are able of putting together. And even though, they're the enemy, it's Superman, so he doesn't want to see any deaths happen. And so he actually he knows that the gyroscope is responsible because he lets himself be captured as Clark Kent, and he gets taken to this this area that they're keeping all the humans that they've captured, and that's where he runs into Victor Epic, and he recognizes him because he's been on the science show as Superman, and he talks to him, and Victor tells Clark Kent, this is my fault. I started this gyroscope. So he uses supervision to look at where the gyroscope is at, and he sees that it's because it wasn't shut down properly, it's going to explode, and it's going to cause injuries to both people from the future and from the present. So Superman starts to so Clark Kent actually gets out of there, and he turns into Superman, and then starts speeding over towards where the gyroscope is, but he actually gets caught in the time anomaly because things are getting more and more disrupted, and he ends up briefly in the past, where the present day Daily Planet is at. So it's up to Commandy to f he gets a tip from Epic on how to shut down the how to shut down the gyroscope, and just as Commandy arrives, Superman is able to fly at super speed to fly his way back to the present. He struggles to break through the time barrier and finally does it, and they both get to the gyroscope at the same time, and they're able to shut it down because Commandy has the information on how to do it correctly. As they shut it down, Commandy disappears, and Epic shows up at the lab, and he starts boarding up the gyroscope machine and disabling it and stuff, and he tells Superman that he's learned his lesson, that he's happy to live in the present where he's at, and be glad for the good things that he has. So it was interesting. I actually really enjoyed this issue too. I thought it was fun. There was a lot of, like I mentioned, there was some really fun little humorous bits, but it had a nice flow to it. The art is really, really good. It was, just it was kind of DC House style, but it was very, very well done as far as the storytelling goes, and stuff is very clear the whole time exactly what was happening, and the backgrounds were rendered well and everything. So, and it was fun reading this back to back with the Batman team up because they were of very different natures, and it's interesting to see how the two writers came up with a way for Commandy to team up with superheroes from the past, and how they did went about that in different ways. I thought it was pretty cool.
Now you need to command the action figure.
I know. Now I need to. I've had the two volumes of the Kirby Commandy
Yeah.
omnibuses for a while, and I haven't read that
I'm
much of
ready when you are.
them. Yeah. Maybe that's a.
My last book will is and you've already talked about it, but I'm continuing with it. Is John Sable Freelance number 2. I've read this title off and on, but never in order. And I am a huge fan of Mike Grell. I got two more commissions from him this year. I'm working on getting the entire cast of Warlord, so hopefully he'll be around Denver Comic Con next year and I can get some more sketches. But this is about a freelance mercenary whose alias. One of the most interesting things about this mercenary is he tries not to kill, but he's hired to do jobs, very much like Maze Agency. He's hired to do jobs, solve mysteries, and do stuff. And he has an alias identity, a secret identity, and his other one he writes children's books. And he wears a disguise when he writes children's books. He wears this curly blonde afro and a mustache. And he doesn't even look like the same guy. And one of the interesting things that happens in this book is he goes, I mean, well, the scene opens up with there's a bunch of deaths. a lot of homeless deaths going on, and there's also he happens to be in a convenience store when a convenience store is being robbed, and he actually takes out the criminals pretty single-handedly, and then a detective comes there and he's pissed because a mercenary stopped these criminals, and he says, "No, the shop owner hires me." He says, "Can you pay me my money?" And he gives him 50 cents and he says, "Thank you for doing your job." So the detective's really pissed off that he does what he does. And there's probably an ongoing theme where that detective is trying to bring him down. He's kind of like the Mr. McGee in the Incredible Hulk. But
Are you
the
getting any sorry, are you getting any background noise from me?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure there's somebody down the street running a weed whacker. I just want to make sure it wasn't getting picked up.
That's no different than any of the other podcasts we get where a fan's running or
He
but
just, you know, Sunday morning and he's whacking his weed.
yeah, but it is already
Public. No, it's
12:20
actually,
over there,
yeah, it's
so
not even Monday anymore. I mean,
yeah.
Monday. Oh man, all this time
You're
travel is
taking a
ruining
lot
my
of time
brain.
travel going on. You're in Commandy world.
Commandy's world's messing with my head.
But anyway, he has this alias, Mr. Phlegm, and he shows up at his work, his publisher's, and he actually has this artist that he pays little attention to, and his artist is a female, and she is really tall. She's like taller than him. I mean, that's one of the notable things. And she's showing him sketch designs, and he doesn't really pay attention to her, and that really pisses her off. Because she's been working with this guy on his books and his children's books for like ever, you know, and she's showing him these leprechaun drawings, and he's not giving a shit about it, and he just takes off. Well, she follows him, and she knocks on the door, and John Sable answers, and he's like, "Who are you? Are you his gay lover, or what are you? What are you doing? Answer the door. I followed him here. I know it's here." And he tries to kick his wig aside, but she ends up finding out that he has that alias and that he's John Sable and still chews his ass. You know, "I've been illustrating your books for 2 years and he never said one word of praise," and gives him all kinds of crap about living in this mansion and not giving her raises for her character designs or anything. But she leaves pretty angry, and he gets a phone call. And gets another case where this woman wants him to find the death of her father. Her father went homeless, and she knew he was getting like Alzheimer's and stuff like that. But she knows he was murdered, and he has to go undercover to find out who's murdering these homeless. And he's got like a guy inside the police department that feeds him information. Then the police files tell him that there's one thing linking. The police don't think it's the same killer that's killing these homeless people. They think it's a gang type thing. In other words, the gang is to get into the initiation, you have to shoot somebody that's homeless or something like that. But there's a casing to these bullets, and the bullets all seem random, and they're not sure where they come from, but they all have something in their inner casing. Well, it turns out that they're linked to the Nazis, and he uncovers this stuff, and he actually finds the Nazi guy, and he actually shoots him, and he doesn't usually commit murder, but he's sitting there bleeding to death, and I don't know if it's because he was bleeding to death that he took a shot through this guy's heart who went out the window, but he actually killed this guy, this Nazi guy, and he wasn't gonna do it. He was gonna bring this person alive to this woman, but she said alive or dead, she didn't care. But he says, "I don't kill people." Well, he just did. Shot some guy through the heart. He was a Nazi. Shot him, and went out the window. And then the next issue says, "At last, the origin." So in issue 3, we'll get the origin of John Sable freelance. But it's really spectacular art. And some of the things that came out of you could subscribe to comics from First, and you can subscribe to Warp, E-Man. I have a full run of E-Man. I haven't read a lot of it, but it looks really weird. John Sable Freelance. Star Slayer, I knew about and I picked up a long time ago, but it was just mostly for the Rocketeer. I didn't read a lot of the Star Slayer. I bought it for the Dave Stevens artwork. American Flag, I just recently picked up a full run of, so you'll be hearing me talk a lot more about First Comics probably in the near future.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good company. Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I have to look back and see how many issues of that John Sable I read. It wasn't that many, maybe five or six or something like that, but they're really good. Definitely anybody that's a fan of Mike Grell's work elsewhere, I would say especially like Green Arrow kind of has a bit of a similar tone. But if you like his art, especially earlier on, I think he stayed on as artist on John Sable for quite a while. It might have eventually have been just the writer towards the end, but I think he did a lot of art on that. I want to say.
Well, this is issue two, and it says created, written, and illustrated by Mike Grell.
Yeah, I
So,
mean, he did the art for quite a while, I
oh
think.
yeah. Yeah, he did it all. The only thing he didn't do is letter, color, and edit.
Yeah. Well, I have one more I'm just going to talk about. I think it'll
Sure.
be a quick one, and then we can get into Buck Rogers. But I picked up this issue of Batman. It's issue 457. I picked it up because I really did not have many DC comics as a kid, and I only had a few issues of Batman that I got randomly off a newsstand or something. This happened to be one of them, but I didn't really remember it. So when I saw the cover, I snagged it for pretty cheap. And this is a story. I forgot to write down the title. What's it called here? Well, I'll tell you, the creative team is Alan Grant, Norm Brayfogle.
That's my favorite Batman artist.
Steve Mitchell is the inker, and Adrian Roy was the colorist. And it has on the cover, it has Batman hung from his feet. It's got spiders crawling all over him, and the Scarecrow is standing there. And then there's some kind of like mysterious figure standing in the window with the moon, like moonlit from behind. He's all in shadow. So just like the title, or just like the cover shows, that the issue opens up with Scarecrow strung up by his feet, and also there is not the mysterious figure, but this but is Vicki Vale, the reporter. She's being held at gunpoint, and it's kind of a continuation of the series, previous episode or issue, because you could tell we're told that Gotham's in a state of fear because Scarecrow had sent out these Christmas cards that caused people to go crazy and attack other people. So even though it's the holidays, everybody's staying indoors and is afraid. And we see Tim Drake. He gets a cab to this abandoned warehouse, and he's distressed, and he's got like a winter hat on, and just some jeans and jacket and stuff. So these henchmen that the Scarecrow hired leave the warehouse with what's supposed to be their payment right around the same time as the cab's pulling up. And they open this envelope, and there's, instead of payment in it, there's some fear gas, which causes them to go crazy and attack the driver, and we see their car crash. Meanwhile, Tim, he gets out of the cab, and he knows, he has a suspicion that Batman is there, that he had gone into a trap. And he was told to stay put and not follow him on this mission, but he's afraid that, as I say, he's in a trap. So he looks in the location where he would think that if Batman was there, where he would store the Batmobile out of sight. And he's right about his hunch. And even though he was hoping that he wouldn't find the Batmobile, we see his detective abilities in action. And he's not armed. So he has to use his ingenuity to get his way in there, and so he starts throwing snowballs at this shed that's marked with a lot of danger signs and stuff that's sort of near these two henchmen, until they decide to go investigate the shed, and then runs up and he locks them in there, and they're stuck in there with flammable material and all these warnings so they can't shoot their way out with the weapons that they're holding. And so then he gets inside and gets past the henchmen. He's able to go in through this other door, and he uses a tripwire to take out a couple other guards that are patrolling the stairway up to the room where he can hear some activity. As he rushes in, at this point, Batman's been doused with the fear chemicals, and he sees the spiders crawling over him like we see on the cover. And as Tim rushes in, he's also doused in fear gas, and so there's all this chaos as Vicki Vale is crawling around on the floor, crying about something that she's seeing, and Tim is seeing people attacking his parents, but as the scene progresses, it's really, really cool. I really love this moment. He sees both Dick Grayson, and who at this point has moved on to become Nightwing, and he sees Jason Todd, who at this point is still dead, and both of them as Robin, and they speak to him through the fear and tell him to encourage him to act through the fear, that even though he's afraid, that doesn't mean that he's incapable of acting. So he has this pole that he's picked up, and he manages to fight through the fear and fight through the visions, and he knocks Scarecrow back into a shelf full of the Scarecrow's chemicals, and Scarecrow gets completely covered in them and just starts going crazy as he would. He sees himself strung up as an actual Scarecrow, and ravens coming in to pick at him and stuff. So the police show up at this point because the cab driver that dropped Tim off alerted them to the suspiciousness of dropping this kid off at this random warehouse, and that there might be something going on. Tim leaves before the police come in, and Batman's on good terms with them at this point. So he turns over the Scarecrow to them, and they ask him if he's okay. He doesn't look too good, but Batman says he's got stuff to take care of. Tells him to take Vicki Vale to the hospital. And then he goes up and meets with Tim, who is waiting by the Batmobile. And Batman asks him, why did you come dressed in your clothes? Why didn't you wear the Robin suit? And Tim tells him that he didn't want to disgrace it if he failed. If he was not able to rescue Batman, he didn't want to disgrace the memory of Jason and what, how the way that Dick had made the Robin costume something that was known for heroism. And he believes that because he disobeyed Batman, that he's not ever going to get to be Robin, but it was more important to him to save Batman from the trap that he believed that he had walked into. So Batman says, it's important to set rules and to live by those rules, but you also need to know those rare occasions when, when the rules need to be broken, and you showed that ability, that this is one of those rare occasions. Saved my life, and you saved Vicky's life. So they go back to the Batcave, and Alfred's there, and they're looking at the co of the costume that Jason wore in the case, and Batman tells him, I know that this is a huge burden, and you need to think about it, but if you still want to be Robin, I think you're ready. And so the final page, we see Tim Drake appear in costume as the new Robin.
That's not my Robin.
He's not Robin. He was never Robin. He just became Red Robin.
Yeah, that's not my Robin.
Yeah.
My
But
Robin
this.
is Dick.
Yeah.
No, that's what I find so weird with people just getting so angry because it's repetitive. This shit happens all the time. Like
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing with all the women they're introducing into the Batman books, but there's got to be something because there are so many women characters, young women characters. Are they going to be the next Robin? Or what are they
Yeah.
going to be? They're introducing you to like three of them.
Right.
Harper Row. There's the new one in Detective that they've introduced where her mother was killed.
Right.
Interesting enough. There's the girl that was with Damien before, that has the same name of the Robin that was in Batman Returns.
Yeah, Cassie Kelly.
Casey Kelly or Cassie.
Casey Kelly. Yeah.
There's so many of them. What are they going to do with these characters, you
And
know? I
then you got Harper Row.
Harper Row, yeah, Harper Bluebird, and there's a lot of things going on, so there's going to be
Yeah.
another Robin.
Interesting.
And then they're going to bring Damian back. At least they're playing with that in the Batman and Robin book.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, they're doing a pretty good job of kind of keeping it mysterious.
yeah, it's all cyclical though. It's none of this
Yeah.
stuff. They basically throw stuff at the board and see what works.
And I was able to go back and read this, and I was able to feel that emotion again of Tim becoming Robin, you know, so that story is still there. And it made me want to just read some more stories of Tim as Robin, you know.
Yeah.
And those are still there for me to read. And I mean, it does remind me, though, one of the things that I think is one of my favorite things about DC, and I do think that this will return in the future, and they'll go back to it, and I'll get it again. But it's the whole idea of the legacy, you know.
Yeah.
That's something that's pretty unique to DC. Marvel doesn't really have much of that, and so I always get inspired. I think it just connects to me, like thinking about, you look at people who are like father figures or mother figures to you, you know, whether that's really your father and mother, or if it's an uncle or a different person, just somebody who came before you, or even someone not related to you that's important to you. Like, just that whole idea of looking at the people that came before you and what they accomplished, and trying to
Yeah.
make them proud, you know?
If you look at the Robins, I mean, you know, Dick Grayson's obviously been around a lot, but what they built and who had the longest title, it was Tim. He had his own title.
Yeah.
He
Yeah,
took
so.
down Shiva, Lady Shiva. So
Yeah, so I liked Tim a lot, and I liked the story. I just like how it got into how he was hesitant to dishonor the legacy, and in fact, he actually, by doing that, was true to the legacy, and
yeah.
just how it's something he really wanted to do, you know.
He's interesting because he discovered who Batman was. He seems to be the smartest of the Robins, at least in what I've read. He seems to be like most technically savvy, and
Yeah.
he has detective skills built in that nobody trained him, you know, from a kid to do. He
Yeah.
just did it. Yeah, he's a more of a self-made Robin. He had his parents at this time. His parents are now dead. One of them dead through identity crisis. But yeah, he's a fascinating character. And for him to be able to maintain his innocence or whatever you want to call it. He's never went for that vengeance thing, even though, you know, boomerang threw the boomerang through his dad's chest.
Yeah.
So he's a good character, and I really like the way they're portraying him in the Eternal, Batman Eternal. It's like Tim. I mean, he's definitely wearing the Red Robin stuff, and he is a little different, but I think in spirit they got him down, you know.
Yeah, I haven't really read, except for the first couple of issues of the Teen Titans. I haven't read much of them there, but I've been reading. I'm up to, you know, I've read through issue 12 of Batman Eternal, and he's particularly been featured in two issues, and one of them is issue 12.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, he definitely comes across as someone who has a lot of detective ability and technological abilities, and you know, he's kind of gone off and taken care of his own mission as a part of this whole storyline where he's doing his own thing, you know.
Yeah.
So
Good stuff.
cool.
So you want to wrap up with Buck Rogers?
Yeah,
Yes,
let's
my
do that.
favorite episode as a kid, but I could say now it's not my favorite episode as an adult, but it's still pretty good. It's very formulaic, of the vampire story. It has like the cross. It has like a freighter instead of a boat bringing Dracula,
Yeah, it
to.
follows a lot of
It
conventions.
follows a lot of the vampire conventions, and then nobody believing him. Even the names that they use, they don't use Van Helsing, but they use something very similar. I can't remember the name, but they use that guy as the guy that was going after the vampires because the vampire had killed his family. So it has a lot of that formula. The things I didn't remember is I didn't remember it being a virus. Like, they were panicked that it was a certain virus that they known about that they didn't have enough vaccination for.
Yeah, was it called EL7, I think,
Yeah,
or something?
EL7, yeah.
I thought for a while they were just saying L7. I don't remember if you remember that
Right.
band. They were like a sort of heavy metal grunge band of all women.
I never heard of them.
They had a song called, well, their famous song was Pretend That We're Dead.
Never heard of it.
When we pretend that we're dead, but it was, but they also had this song called Shit List that I always used to listen to.
Shit list.
Yeah, like how you made my shit list,
Oh, nice.
and the one chorus you'd just be like, "Shit list."
What was the name of him again?
L7.
L7.
Yeah, the letter L, the number
And they're
seven.
all women? Huh.
Yeah, they're kind of like a grunge metal
I've
kind
heard
of
of
like a
Level 7, but not L7.
90s. So I thought that's what they were saying for a little while. Thought that was kind of funny, but. Yeah,
Buck and Wilma arrive at a Theta station to have Twiggy serviced, and Dr. Theopolis isn't even around his neck. I think Twiggy had too much sex, is what happened, and he's wasted.
because apparently Tina's still his girlfriend.
Yeah, Tina's
They
still
make
his
a mention to
girlfriend.
her.
They're even referencing it.
There's some
He's
continuity
been
there.
getting too much action, and Twiggy's exhausted. He needs to be serviced.
Yeah, he meets the guy that's gonna work on him, and he says, "Give me five, big man. Be
Yeah.
cool, big daddy." He's like, "What the? I've never met a robot that acts like this."
As soon as they get there, another plane collides with the base, and there's nobody on the plane except they find a lot of dead corpses, at least what appear to be dead. And they think it's the virus that we just talked about. And they bring all the bodies into the medical bay, so the doctor looked really familiar to me, and I kind of googled him. It was Dr. Ekbar. He was Lincoln Kilpatrick. And I think why he looked familiar, looking at his filmography, was based on a lot of TV. He was in a lot of TV shows that I watched for one episode or two. He didn't seem to have any longevity, but he was in everything that I watched. So that has to be why he looked familiar to me.
Yeah, I noticed he was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but he actually does some investigation on those corpses. Before they enter the ship, they put on these weird belts, and I didn't understand that, but they were like, what was with those black belts that they put on? Was it supposed to help them with radioactivity? 'Cause I don't understand, because they said, do we need to put on, like radioactive suits? And they're like, nah, we're already contaminated. Let's just go in. But then they says, put this belt on, and what does that belt do? I didn't really understand that. And then Wilma
Yeah, I
even
didn't really
put,
make note of it
she didn't
either.
have a belt in, but she got called in, like, you know how Dracula could look into my eyes, come to me. He kind of like was doing that
Yeah.
shit with Wilma the whole series, and
Like
she went into the
hypnotism.
plane without a belt, but then when she met up with everybody, she had a belt, and I was like, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I didn't even really notice the belts, to be honest. But they go into the freighter that collided with the station, and they find out everybody is dead, and the guy that's in charge declares a quarantine. But they do get a recording that they watch the captain's log, and she has a bunch of entries on it where she catalogs the whole progression of people starting to get sick and dying on the ship, and it ends with her freaking out and seeing somebody that never appears on screen, even as she looks like she's being choked by someone, it's still you still can't see anyone, and she
Very, very,
says,
very, very much
now
was,
it's after me.
yeah, but very much in the vein of Dracula, who can't, who in some films couldn't be caught in film. He couldn't be caught on
Their
film. He
mirrors.
couldn't be caught in a mirror. The only thing different with this vampire is only certain people could see him, like his victims would see him. But there was one time where he showed up at the bar or the cantina or whatever. And like Wilma was freaking out, and nobody else saw that. Like even Twiggy was like, "What the hell are you looking at?" Beady, beady, beady.
Yeah, and before that, they're just kind of sitting there because she's by this point kind of sick, and he says, I've had better conversations with a roto-rooter, you know?
Yeah.
Because she's not really engaging him, but
Yeah, she's pretty much terrified the whole episode, and she looks like she has the chills, like she's always cold.
Yeah, and you posted pictures of the, I think that vampire's name is Helsin. Or maybe I got him confused, but
No, it was Volvo.
oh right, Helsin's like
He was
the
the Van Helsing
Helsinger.
guy. Yeah. Vorvon was the vampire, played by Nicholas Harmon. When I actually saw that, I thought it said Nicholas Harmon, and he was Spider-Man in the TV show. I'll say.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, he you posted some pictures of him. He looks really, I thought he looked sort of like an albino Klingon.
He looked very cheesy. I know what they were going after. They were going after the Nosferatu look.
Yeah, I was
You know what
just
I
gonna say
mean?
that, yeah.
He had the Nosferatu look, but what they really did is they gave him these really stupid ears that
Yeah, they
made
were
him look like
wacky.
they were wacky ears that made him look goofy. And then sometimes he had this really goofy smile, like where you couldn't tell he had teeth or not. And he didn't even use the fangs. Like, why have the fangs? Because he like uses his fingers, it looks like.
Yeah.
He
And he had a
doesn't.
massive unibrow
Oh, that's what's very distinctive. I can't believe I didn't say that.
too.
That's the biggest unibrow I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. He doesn't bite the victims. He goes up and you see it by like the victims, they have a bruise on either side of their throat. But he goes up and he kind of makes like the devil horns with his hand. He puts his long fingers on either side of the person's throat
Yeah.
of his like pointer and his pinky finger.
The other thing that's interesting too is like in just like in the Dracula one, is he after Lucy? I can't remember. No, not Lucy. What's the other one? Lucy was the first victim. He's after Van Helsing's, not Van Helsing. Son of a bitch! I can't remember. Nina. Nina.
Nina, yeah.
He's after Nina, and in this one, Nina is played by Colonel Deering.
Yeah.
And he seems to be going after Deering, and he's even that's like his primary goal, and he says in order to get to Colonel Deering I have to take out Buck first. And he even attempts to take out Buck, but Buck is smart enough to know his old Dracula stories, so he goes back in the ship to find something to fight this vampire who everybody doesn't believe Buck. Like they think it's this virus. They
I think
think
the
he's full
virus
of shit.
causes hallucinations and stuff.
Hallucinations and craziness, and that's the symptom because they actually can see this vampire where nobody else can. But what Buck did see is he saw the attack on Helsing or whatever his name was, because he got the drone to work again. Twiggy and him got that drone to get the video coverage, but unfortunately, he was the only one that saw that video footage. Nobody else believed him. So he went back in the ship. He found what was equivalent to a cross, which looked like diamonds around a, I don't know, another diamond.
It's like a big, it's a big
Circle.
diamond with
Yeah.
like set into a thing with a bunch of jewels on it or something. But
Right.
whatever it is, it's like a symbol that's equivalent to a cross.
Right. It's the cross for the 25th century.
Yeah.
And he actually wards off the vampire with the cross because he touches the vampire with the cross. The Vorvon freaks out and goes away and sends all of these vampires that he's zombified after him because he's able to bring them back and work for him. And it looks like Buck is knocked out, but before he gets knocked out, he turns on the alarm. And I guess that scares the zombies away. And the Vorvon, instead of turning into a bat, he turns into a red ball of energy and
Yeah.
takes off.
It's like a massive laser pointer light. But yeah, nobody, that's the thing with it. It's because they think that the drug causes you to, or the disease causes you to hallucinate. No matter what you say, they think that you're hallucinating, and they don't even really seem to know the whole mythology of Dracula and vampires in the future. So, how the vampire continues to stalk Wilma, and Buck saves her at one point, but then before anyone can find them, the vampire disappears. So it just looks like Buck is going crazy to the point that he's got a gun on Wilma. So they think that they're both infected, but they think Buck's the advanced case, so they actually lock him up and they confine Wilma to her quarters, which is bad because that's exactly what the vampire wants, is for Wilma to be alone. And sure enough, he shows up and he is able to hypnotize her, or not hypnotize her at this point, but he's able to start to turn her so that she starts to act like him.
But she negotiates with him. She says, if you leave Buck and that other guy alone and the rest of the ship, you can have me. And he basically says, well, you're all I've ever wanted on the ship. And we'll go to other planets to get what we need, to steal the souls. It's like they feed off of fear and also off the souls of people. And, meanwhile, Buck never, the thing that drives me crazy about Buck is he kind of knows what's going on, but he always leaves on his own and saying, Wilma, why don't you come with me so I can watch you? Why doesn't he say that? He's just
Yeah,
like, you
well,
go in your room and there's a freaking virus and thing. I would keep her, unless he thought that there still was a virus, but I don't think he thought it was a virus at the time. He kind of
no,
kept her out
he
of his
didn't.
investigation.
He didn't. I mean, well, this last time he didn't have a choice, because they locked him up, but
Yeah, they
yeah,
had locked him up. He didn't have a choice, but
prior to
there's
that,
like
he yeah.
prior to that, like two times he had the opportunity to take her with her, and she was already acting weird, but he failed to do so. But he was smart enough to say, "Huh, I wonder what happened to vampires in the past." Well, sunlight. So he rigs a ship to basically warp back into to a sun. He rigs the ship to do that. Unfortunately, Wilma gets bit. She tries to seduce Buck, and she's got a creepy voice. I don't remember the voice being that creepy,
Yeah,
because
she
it's
goes all sexy mode.
she goes into sexy mode, but it almost sounds like a man at some point.
Yeah, she's got a real deep voice, and they have like a effect on it so that it echoes and stuff.
Yeah.
So she's talking in like a real deep husky whisper.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid that, man, I was like, please bite me, please bite me. I'd go to bed and think that Erin Grey was biting me because she was sexy as all hell. But anyway, she gets bit, so she goes after Buck, but Buck fends her off. Buck's fight scenes are just fucking horrible. This the even when he's fighting the zombies, it's like they're afraid to do any kind of stunt with him, physically doing a legitimate punch, or he kind of just pushes things. I don't know if you noticed, but He doesn't really have a good action fight scene. He kind of just pushes
No.
things away.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But anyway, the Vorvan satisfied, he takes off with Wilma in the ship that they came in, which is rigged, and it kind of goes through with the Stargate and goes directly into the sun, but Wilma seems to have gotten control of her mind at some point. She's like, "What the hell's going on?" The Vorvan's freaking out because he's a being. He seems like a being of energy, and the more energy that he gets, the more overloaded he can get in the
Yeah.
sun. He's flying into the sun, and Wilma actually can eject. She ejects herself because Buck tells her there's a ship that she can eject from, an escape pod, if you will, and she essentially ejects. Meanwhile, on Earth, what is his name?
Dr. Hewer?
Dr. Ewers trying to keep Buck's plant alive
Yeah. That's
throughout
like an ongoing thing throughout the episode.
the episode. He even gives up. He's like, I've tried, bring in the robotic drones to take care of this plant. And even they can't save the plant. So he buys a plastic one, right?
Right. Well, he buys a new plant that he thinks is the same one. And then when Buck gets back, he said, "You know, I've been taking care of plants my whole life, and I've never been able to turn a blah 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 into a yada yada." I don't remember the names of the
Yeah.
plants, but he like basically immediately recognizes that he bought the wrong kind of plant to replace the plant.
And that's the giggling ending of
Yeah, they
the.
always have to have some kind of funny. Yeah, I think with that final.
He tried to throw some funnies earlier too at Wilma, like in the bar, and she wasn't laughing. He's like, "You're not laughing at any of my jokes."
They're jealous because Twiggy's always the funniest part.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of with that last scene, I kind of got the impression that maybe, well, at least the way I was seeing it was that the sun was destroying the vampire, and because Wilma wasn't completely turned yet, the sun kind of like bled out the part of her that was it kind of healed her, maybe.
But it healed
But
everybody.
well,
Everybody
once
that was infected on the ship. Once you know how
he was
sometimes there
killed.
yeah, sometimes there's that theory in some vampire lore that if you kill the head vampire too,
Right.
that the others will return to normal.
Yeah, the vampire getting killed, I know, cured everybody else, but didn't she start to get her mind back before he died, I thought?
Yeah, he did. She did.
Yeah, so I thought maybe that was from the sun or
It was
something.
almost because as soon as they warped, they went through
Yeah.
that Stargate and the sun was there. She seemed to get her, like this, where am I? What am I doing on this ship? And who's this
Yeah.
vampire next to me? But as soon as that vampire died, everybody was cured. The doctor was cured.
Yeah.
All those people that were on the ship, they were back to normal. Everybody was safe.
Yeah, it was an entertaining episode. I think we've had a bunch of really, really strong ones in a row coming into this one. So there have definitely been better episodes, but it wasn't bad. I mean, it was just like you said, it was a little bit predictable, and I think it was because the last few episodes that we've had have been really good ones. It was noticeably a little bit of a downturn from those,
Yeah.
but that was decent.
Yeah, I
Had a few
enjoyed it. I
moments, yeah.
enjoyed it. I enjoyed this week's of comics. I enjoyed the ones that I chose. They were very different. And that
Yeah,
was a
the
good
ones I
episode.
talked about were all strong. They were all really strong reads for me. They were highly rated.
Yours had a link of Commandy. Mine had a link of. At least two of them did of like detective stories, like single done in one detective pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But anyway, do you want to wrap this guy up?
Yeah, probably should get on with the day.
Yep, this has been Geek Brunch Retrocast episode what? I don't know.
Gonna guess 36. I'm gonna look. But yeah, I forgot to look earlier.
Like us on the Facebook page. If you search for Geek Brunch and then click the like button, we post all the episode threads there. We also tend to post some stuff that is related to the show.
It
up
was actually,
there.
this is episode 36, and you could have investigated that yourself as well by going to geekbrunchpodcast.com.
Yeah, that's where you can leave comments there. And also, you can leave us notes on the Twitter at MythMakingETC. That's for Chris, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And we have emails at mythmakingetc@gmail.com. Did I get that right? Well, that was weird.
Yeah, we almost made it.
Yeah, the mail was at mythmakingetc@gmail.com, right?
Yep.
You need to send me your cell phone number, by the way.
I did back when we
I know,
started
but
the
I can't
show, but
find it.
yeah, I'll give it to you again.
Yeah.
I think I still have yours in my phone. But,
What else? What else do I need to do? Oh, mine is mike@comicbooknoise.com, and leave an iTunes review, please, and put there that you like the show. That helps get visibility. I need to get us on Stitcher. That's a task for me. But we will talk to you again in 2 weeks or so. And
Yeah, and I'll just shout one more thing out. If you
sure.
go to mythmakingetc.com, I set that up during the break, and what it's just going to be is it's linked to on my Twitter too, if you just go from there. But in case you want to find the stuff that I do, I'm just using it as a place to put I'll put links up when we have a new episode of this podcast, and if I do any other podcasts, I'll put links up there. And if I'm doing any blog posts on different places, I'm probably going to be having some comic reviews of like old and new comics up on Taylor Network. So I'll put links to those and stuff. So if it's just going to be like a one-stop shop for anything that I do on the internet, so it's just kind of like my internet home. So you can check that out.
There you go. And I think that's it.
Yeah, that'll do
I'll
it.
let you go help your neighbor with the weed whacker.
Yeah, it looks like his weed is not completely whacked, so
Or
I'll go get
do another coat of paint.
take a crack at it.
All right, take it easy.
All right,
See you
bye.
soon. Bye.
Yep, bye.
Yeah.